This is the Warrior Mind Podcast, and I'm your host, Greg Swanson. Podcasting from beautiful Bend, Oregon, the Warrior Mind Podcast is a personal empowerment series that provides you the information required to develop a mindset of a warrior, maximize your human potential, and achieve peak performance. The Warrior Mind Podcast is produced every week for your enjoyment, and show notes and links can be found at www.warriormindcoach.com/blog. Please come back often and feel free to add the podcast to your favorite RSS feed or iTunes. If this is your first time listening, thanks for coming. If you're returning, thank you for your continued support. This is episode 333, and today I had the pleasure of interviewing a wonderful, wonderful gentleman, Bob Choate. Bob lived in the LA area when I was down there, and I think if we would have met when I lived there, we would be best friends now, although it seems like we're best friends after these couple of interviews. I was just recently interviewed on his School of Transformation podcast, and I found the connection very strong and wanted to not necessarily interview, but just have a discussion with him. So this is kind of like eavesdropping on a discussion among two friends who haven't met for a very, very long time. Bob has a wonderful background. His childhood story is fascinating. I think you're going to find it very powerful. He comes from a background also of the Marines, LAPD. But his thinking and the way he looks at mindset resonates very, very strongly with me. So enjoy this podcast. I will put links on where to find Bob on where the podcast is hosted. Also, Bob will tell you at the end of the interview. But please sit back and just enjoy this podcast. Well, Bob, welcome. Thank you so much for joining me on this podcast. I know that we had an interview last week, and it was just a blast to talk with you. And we've been connecting on Facebook for a while, and I think it's appropriate that we now get together and chat a little bit. I appreciate you taking time.
Well, thank you for having me on. I mean, it was a blast last week. It was a lot of fun, and I got to know a lot about you, your backstory, and my audience is really going to benefit from that story. I mean, it was really, really, truly amazing beyond that.
Well, thank you. And speaking of backstories, you have a diverse backstory. So, for my listeners that aren't familiar with you, that don't follow you on Facebook, give, if you can, a Reader's Digest version of your backstory, starting with Marines and then and moving on from there. Just so we can set the context of where your mindset comes from.
I'm actually going to go before that, because my foundation on everything I do, whether it was when I was in the Marine Corps, the LAPD, even up to now, has always been the martial arts. I know that you've been in the martial arts, and my mom was my very first martial arts teacher. Starting when I was 18 months old, she put a stick in my hand, was teaching me kendo. Then later on, I lived in Okinawa, and I studied goju as a kid, and trained with my uncle Keiji in both kendo and judo. In fact, he still is practicing now at 103.
Wow, amazing. So that's what you have to look forward to.
Yeah. So going from there, because I had a lot of issues in terms of growing up, I was diagnosed as being mentally retarded with an IQ of 70. And back in those days, they gave me a diagnostic label as a moron. So I had to overcome that, plus being half Japanese and living in like the areas of the South, like in Georgia and Alabama and all that kind of stuff, Alabama twice, dealing with those kind of issues, plus going from school to school as we traveled all over the place and then having that label. Plus, I had a scar on my forehead here that I got on my grandparents' farm in the Ozarks. And they had, so I had a lot of issues, yet it was a martial arts.
Right.
It was a martial arts that kept me going. It kept me, in fact, sane, whether I played sports or academics or otherwise. So I kept going, kept challenging myself. The Marine Corps was part of that challenge. Mm-hmm. The LAPD was part of that challenge. My academic arena was part of that challenge. And then growing like different businesses and everything like that, all the way to the present. Yet I still kind of fall back to my martial arts.
Right. So you mentioned something that's just fascinating. You know, when you were labeled with quote, moron. And was that an official label back then?
It was, yes. It was official diagnostic label. They had since gotten rid of labels like that.
Right. But so, you know, as a child, we tend, or even as adults, we tend to live into the labels that people give us.
Correct.
Many times, right? So yes. How was it? How was it that you were able to move beyond that label and become the person you are today, but more specifically back then, to go to school, to go get the education, to go to the Marines? I mean, when you're young and labeled as a moron, many kids would just surrender and going, that's it. I can't learn anything. I'm stupid. And that's the way it is. You know, it's this fixed mindset, if you will. So what was it? Was it your grandma? Was it the martial arts that allowed you to realize that you have more capabilities than a label?
Actually, my mom did help me through a lot of that. Mm-hmm. It was by introducing me to the martial arts, by going beyond what a psychologist said at that time, and really being an advocate early on.
Right.
Then my sensei along the way. Then I had some amazing teachers that I was able to emulate. I knew that where I was and where I could be, it was basically based on the dreams and a belief that I had about myself. I didn't believe, because I could perform in a martial arts, I didn't believe that I was a moron. Yet I had to get past that early on. I had to get past all those kind of things early on. Having been a lifelong stutter was part of the challenge. Mm-hmm. So I would go into schools and the teacher would introduce me as a moron and I stuttered, sat in the back of the room. I mean, it was crazy. Yes, most people would have like totally given up and just gone that way.
Because we make comments when I'm talking with you, it was just kind of a passing comment. Yeah, I was labeled as a moron, but I moved beyond it. Well, how? I mean, this is what I'd like to look at is how does the mind work? Because it's for you, you look back, it's like, yeah, it's just what I did. But for even kids, adolescents, adults that have these labels, we tend to own those, and that's who we are. We identify with them. But there was something within you. What I heard was your self-belief.
Yes.
Regardless of whatever else was there, either through martial arts, your mom, your grandma, but somewhere along the line that you developed a strong self-belief that, hey, this is not true. This is not who I am.
When I knew that I could excel in a martial arts, mm-hmm. before the label of moron, so the martial arts was my first label, being a martial artist.
Okay.
That was my first label before the age of 5. And then from there, it just kept going. People would even ask me questions about the martial arts, wherever I whichever school that I went to.
Right.
Yet, when it came to everything else, it was different. Now, I recently talked to a cousin of mine who I went to third grade with, and she remembered me as not being a moron, even though I was introduced as a moron.
Right.
And this was in the Ozarks, and having to deal with the prejudice there. It was really interesting that she said, which I don't remember, I scored the highest score in a class on a spelling thing.
Yep.
Yeah. So I aced it 100, and yet I still had that label of a moron.
Yeah, but what I'm really hearing here is that the label to you was insignificant at some level. It just, and part of that could be because, and this is what's important for my listeners and your listeners, if they're, is that what you may have, what I'm hearing, what you did unconsciously is you look back at the martial arts and saw your successes in your progression in it. And
yes.
And I'm not putting words in your mouth, but what I'm seeing is that you look at it and say, hey, I'm a success here. If I'm a moron, I shouldn't be able to be successful here. So I don't believe this label.
Exactly. In fact, that's one of the things that I teach people. If you seem to be failing in one area, yeah, you can have wins in other areas. If you focus on the wins that you have in another area, you can bridge that gap in order to win in any other area that you focus on.
Yep. I call it your personal success formula. We all have a formula on where we exceed somewhere in our life. We're excelling somewhere in our life. And when we can be able to break that down, we're then able to, like you said, transfer it to another. But again, I think it's really important for the listeners to know that, you know, we're adults, so we maybe have a different level of consciousness and critical thinking. But you're a five-year-old boy, and you get this label, but you go, ah, pooey, just a label. I'm moving on.
Well, again, I think I had a unique way of being able to look at it that most people really don't have.
Yeah.
I know that there's a lot of martial arts schools now, yet it's different. When I went through martial arts training, whether it was with my mom mm-hmm. or Goju studying in Okinawa back in those days, it was really challenging.
Yep.
And when I could go through those kind of challenges and then come out stronger, it was like, okay, I'm a winner. If it's in the martial arts, I'm still a winner.
Right. And that's what I love about martial arts. When I took it, when I lived in New Jersey, I was Tang Sudo, and I was actually taught by the grandmaster's son of Tang Sudo. And we would go into the dojo, and it was very disciplined. And he mm-hmm. pretty much said, hey, I came to America and learned to speak America. You're in Korea now in this dojo. You need to learn to speak Korean. And so it was, I mean, it would just put a discipline into us. And I think martial arts is just a wonderful, unfortunately, maybe some of them today are a little bit more commercialized, but we're getting off topic. Back to you. So how did you find this childhood experience helping you within the Marines? Did you take it to a new level? Did it help you persevere through boot camp and other things?
Yeah. One of the things, my mom, even before I went in, because she was my biggest support. So she gave me a coin before I went in. And in essence, it said that you're a warrior, you know, like I'm proud of you. So she gave me this coin, and that represent a certain level of power within myself, carrying the martial arts within my heart. Going to boot camp, starting there, yes, it was challenging mm-hmm. in terms of what I had to go through. Yet I liken it back to when I first was studying the martial arts in Okinawa and what my sensei had every one of us to do. We had to be disciplined, where we had to sweep the hallways. We had to sweep the mats before and after. We had to do all kinds of like heavy duty, both psychological and physiological kind of stuff. I mean, I remember my knuckles bleeding by just pounding and pounding and pounding. We did push-ups. I did push-ups as a kid on my knuckles and just kept doing that every day. And I mean, we had big old, like these big old vats where I would do spear hand techniques down into this.
Into rice and gravel and other things?
Everything.
Yeah.
So doing this as a kid and just bleeding and all this kind of stuff, doing what I had to do when I was in boot camp, yes, there was a lot of discipline, a lot of the psychological, a lot of the physical kind of stuff. Same thing. I had already gone through that. So there was nothing in boot camp that was going to challenge me to the extreme. A lot of people I saw completely break down. And then going beyond that, so I stepped up to every single challenge that the Marines offered me.
So let me ask you something, Bob. This has been an observation that I have. A lot of the military folks, Mark Devine, right, from SEAL Fit,
sure.
Yourself and others, you have a military background that you can draw upon. You were forced to go through this. You either survived or you were thrown out, basically, and you were forced to survive it. So you have a different mindset on how you approach life, how you approach your business. But for the civilian, let's just say even 30 years and older, who has never experienced this extreme discipline of martial arts or the military, how do you convey? Because, right, experience is you have to have the experience in order to learn, right? You either
sure.
you can read a book and you have knowledge, or you read the book and do the action, you have wisdom. How do you help your clients and your people who have no basically martial art discipline, military discipline, how do you help them sharpen their focus and their mental fortitude?
Well, number one, I get them focused on something, a mission. When I was in the Marine Corps, it was all about the mission, mm-hmm. whether it's in recon or otherwise. It's always about the mission. Once I can get my client focused on a mission, then I scale them down to each chunk. And those chunks are just focusing on the everyday step-by-step process to challenge themselves just a tiny bit more. Start from where they're at. Yes, not everybody will come from a martial arts background, especially what I went through. Not everybody will come from a military background or anything like that. Yet, you can still gain the same thing even after age of 30, after 40, after 50 by taking those small steps, just stepping slightly outside where you're comfortable. Because
So let me ask you, I mean, this brings up a great point, and this is something I find with my clients. When you're in martial arts, the mission is almost defined for you.
Sure.
It's the ranking of the belts. When you're in the military, somebody's telling you what the mission is. You don't really necessarily have to think about it unless you're at that level, and then you define the mission, right? If you're a general or something like that. So with the average person, they've been told what to do since school. Well, since they've been born, right? They've been told by their parents. They've been told by their school teachers. They've been told by their professors. They've been told by their boss what they're supposed to do. Many people don't know how to come up with a mission, how to think for themselves. So the first thing, I mean, it's, I understand developing a mission, but how do you help people define what that mission is? Because we've been told what to do for our whole life.
Then that goes into their heart. Mm-hmm. So find really what makes your heart sing. And if you have to go back to when you were a child, because I think that's where the pure essence mm-hmm. is located. We tend to lose that as we go through stages of growth. And you mentioned that we're being told what to do by other people. And part of this, like when we're born, we're now coming into the first stage of growth and we start to see things, basically just being aware. And as we progress to the second stage of growth, we start becoming how those things are related to us. Mm-hmm. And then the third stage of growth is how not only those things, how they're related to us, but now we're starting to develop more of an ego and growing that. Then a fourth stage of growth is where the rules and regulations come in. And that's usually about 7 to 9 years old. Mm-hmm. So in that stage of growth, this is where we're starting being told what to do.
Right.
We have to go back before that. We have to, in essence, go back before that and also right after that. And the reason I say right after that, because that's the fifth stage of growth. And so we have the rules and regulations. Our parents are telling us what to do. The schools, all these different rules are coming in, and we start to follow them. Mm-hmm. In the fifth stage of growth, we start challenging the rules. Mm-hmm. We go through, so this is like around 11 years old. So at 11 years old, we start challenging all the rules, and we see like teenagers like acting out. All this kind of stuff. And the older people will say, oh my gosh, those teenagers, they don't know what they're freaking crazy and everything. Yeah. Once a person graduates from high school, either they're going to go to college or they're going to go work, go in the military. In a real world, there are way more rules than ever before. Mm-hmm. And they start following those rules. What
right.
stage of growth was those rules in? Fourth, right?
Yep.
So we go from fifth stage of growth back down to fourth stage of growth. And that's usually what happens the rest of the person's life. Mm-hmm. They're now stuck. They're following all these rules. The rules, I have to get married. I have to do this kind of job. I have to go to school, maybe graduate school.
Yep.
Boom, 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 boom. And we lose our passion. We start challenging rules to go back to before the rules came in, mm-hmm. following our passion. It doesn't make sense to staying stuck. As a person gets older, so typically what happens in their 40s and 50s, a person will go through what's called a midlife crisis. Mm-hmm. We see the guy getting his red sports car, or women that are, you know, going through.
Well, it's funny. What's funny, I'll let you get back to it, but it's For a guy, it's called a midlife crisis. For a female, what used to be called, I need to go find myself.
Yeah. Yes.
and then that was not chauvinistic because right now I think a lot of us look at it as a midbirth. But
sure.
But you're absolutely right. So continue, please.
So what happens when you get to this part in your life? You start challenging the rules because you question everything. You question, you know, I thought that when I do this and this and this, I would become successful and happy and blah, 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 blah. Well, guess what? It didn't happen because you followed the rules in a 4-stage of growth. Mm-hmm. Now, when you start challenging rules, you start approaching the 5th stage of growth, which should have happened back in your teens. And it didn't. You didn't allow yourself to go beyond that. So we start challenging that.
So what you're saying is that for people who the mission is based on what makes, from what you said, is based on what makes a person's heart sing, but yes, we've buried that or it's been buried. We've allowed it to be buried by all of the rules through stage 4. And we need to get back into challenging those rules and what's really important to me, which was really back in stage 3, perhaps, that we really knew what we loved to do. And we may not have known that we wanted to be whatever profession it is, but we knew what we were attracted to certain things. Like for myself, I go back and I'm going to date myself here, but I used to love Kreskin ESP game. Right. Mm-hmm. So I knew that at some level there was a higher level of intelligence to us.
Sure.
And then I was told to stop playing that game, et cetera, et cetera. So when I got into my business, I went back to that. So is that kind of what you're saying, is that if we can't find this mission to chunk down to small steps, we need to go back to what really made our hearts sing.
What made our hearts sing. That's right. Very important. Once you find what makes your heart sing, your passion in life, then you can put that into your mission. So passion to mission. And then from there, if you've done things like the martial arts and the military, you had the rules, this is what you can do. Any rules that you have, think about, well, how can I now take what I learned in those kind of rules to create my own rules?
Mm-hmm.
So you get rid of those rules. Now you set up your own rules to govern your life.
A code of honor.
Your personal code of honor.
Right.
Yes. So you follow that, and then you're able to move forward in terms of being your own true warrior. I know that because that's what you're all about.
Right. Yes. So how did you find out what makes your heart sing, or were you pursuing that your whole life?
In a sense, everything I've done is based on what I love. Mm-hmm. Love to challenge myself both physically and mentally. Mm-hmm. And to grow, to find those kind of things in my life. And even the most important in what I learned early on is I really love to help people, mm-hmm. to teach, to educate. That actually came later on. Early on, I wanted to be – now, here, don't get crazy on this with and laughing. My passion is I wanted to be Superman. Mm-hmm. I really did. Mm-hmm. I mean, so much so that I would put a towel around my neck and I would like draw an S on it and on a t-shirt. And I would like find things to try to jump off of and boom, you know, whether it was a chair to try to, then I was thinking about climbing to the roof till my mom said no.
And so then you joined the military and jumped out of planes, right?
You want to know something? One of the things that influenced me, there was an old Bugs Bunny cartoon years ago. It was World War II, Bugs Bunny. Mm-hmm. And Bugs Bunny, he had this carrot where he was eating, gave him superpowers. So he would fly all over the place. And at the end, the villain of it also got the carrot and made him strong. And Bugs Bunny ran out of his superpowers. Then he stopped the villain. He says, I'm going to become a real hero. And you saw him marching in dress blues.
Wonderful.
Yeah. So he became a real superhero. I think subconsciously, that affected me. Mm-hmm. And then everything else, watching John Wayne and the Sands of Iwo Jima and those kind of movies kind of influenced me to want to wear those dress blues, to become that superhero. Early on, I really wanted to be the person coming in to save the day. Mm-hmm. I did this as a kid. I remember there was this these puppies that were stuck in this long, deep tunnel, and nobody could get them out. And I crawled in all the way in. Now, had I been claustrophobic, I probably wouldn't have done it. So I crawled all the way down through this long, 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 long tunnel, and somebody like tied a rope around my feet, and I was able to, one by one, grab these puppies out. Wow. Yeah, and I love doing that. Even now, I'm the kind of person that will run to something with, if there's a shooting going down or anything. Yeah, I would take cover first, but then I would see what I can do or to help people.
Well, I mean, it makes sense. You were in the Marines, you were in the LAPD, and it's that of service, of you wanted to be of service, whether it was the Superman or whatever it comes through. But all of those disciplines really helped support your thinking, right? Because going back to the beginning of our interview, you know, being labeled as a moron as a five-year-old, whatever, I mean, that's pretty powerful. But yet you disciplined through that, through martial arts, through the Marines, through other aspects of life, and through the police to where you are now. So, sure. I mean, those aspects of your life helped sharpen your mind, I would say.
Yes. I learned later on, I love really helping people. Yet, even Superman was limited. Mm-hmm. Superman could only be at one place at one time. He couldn't simultaneously save two people at the same time. He couldn't do it. It was impossible. And I learned that had I put all my effort in to try to help people in that way, one-on-one kind of thing, it didn't work. Mm-hmm. And it wasn't until I got the analogy of, if you give a man a fish, you feed him for a day. If you teach him how to fish, you feed him for life.
Right.
Then I decided, you know, I could even take that a step further. If I teach him how to teach others how to fish, then you could feed the whole world.
Yeah. Good point.
Yes. So I decided that I wanted to start from coaching to teaching and spreading what I've learned in helping people on a greater level, helping people to help themselves. Whereas I can't be there. It started initially in teaching with the martial arts, which I still do. Mm-hmm. And I'll find somebody that, you know, whether it's a woman that's been battered and beaten by somebody that's been bullied, mm-hmm. I will come up and even volunteer in a lot of ways to teach them what I know, whether it's martial arts or hand-to-hand combat or self-defense, anything like that. That's going to help them where they can help themselves. Right. Instead of waiting for somebody to come and rescue them, to step up for them to become their own warrior,
right,
and to go for it.
So you mentioned that you have, which brings us to kind of where you are today, how you're assisting people. And I think, you know, your philosophy is right on. It's when we work one-on-one, we can only affect so many people. But when we work one-on-one and help them work multiple, so we work multiple and help those multiples work multiple. So what are some of the processes that you use? What are some of the, your workshops? What are you doing?
Yeah. I look back, and including, which is really good because of my podcast, The School of Transformation, I look back at every single story of every single guest. I look back on my own story, and I realized that the guests that have been able to traverse from the story that they had to a new story in their life where they rose, going from a great challenge and going through that transformation and into growth, as you talk about that, the transformation happens in that dark part, mm-hmm. and coming out. I realized something, that it's always about the story that we tell ourselves.
Mm. Yep.
I decided to create a new workshop called Change Your Story, Change Your Life. I started writing about that. Mm-hmm. If we can change our story, we can change our life. And here's the thing. Our stories are really not real. They're just our perception, our beliefs of what we think happened. In fact, two people can go through the same experience and have a different story, have a different perception of what happened, depending on our beliefs. And then from that experience and our beliefs in combining, we create new beliefs. Yep. So even like with myself, I look back, the beliefs I have now are even different than the beliefs I had back in those days.
And you make it, you make an excellent point, and you're singing my song, because one of the things that I'm such adamant about is, you know, you listen to clients and stuff. It's just a story. It's all just a story, mm-hmm. and that we have control over the story. So I think you're doing amazing work, because that's something that I think when people understand that they may be talking. And so what one of the things I tell clients, and I want to see how you agree or disagree with this, is that many times the words we use don't describe, they create.
Correct. Correct. Exactly. We look for the right words as part of that.
Right. Because as we think we are describing an event, whether past or future, we're actually creating it in our mind. We're creating the emotions with it. Mm-hmm. We are reliving it. So we're not actually really describing it. We're creating it. And the more we create those things, the more we relive them. So with the work that you do, if we learn to tell a different story, we learn to create a different experience.
Yes. Even just changing, because you mentioned words, even just replacing a word that may have been disempowering mm-hmm. to something that's empowering. Just one word. And you just change, just take this one out, plug this new one in. And once you start using that on a regular basis, it changes that whole story.
Yep.
Changes how you look at it. Just one word. And we can do this for a lot of areas. How you even like physically carry yourself would change a story right. of your past. So if you start walking around with more confidence and you raise your arms up, thinking about the story that you had, it changes it.
Right, right. One of the great tricks I like to use with clients, if they're feeling down or whatever it is, I tell them to stand up if they're not already. Stand up, go on their tiptoes, look at the sky, open their arms up as if they're going to hug something and start to smile. I go, now how do you feel? And they go, wow, that changed.
Yes.
So to emphasize your point, I mean, that's a really good point.
Yes. And I'm going to make a suggestion that everybody, whether using a journal, because I use a journal mm-hmm. every day, and I write in it on first thing I do, I wake up and I say that I'm grateful for this day and what it has to offer. Mm-hmm. This day, whether it's a challenges, whatever happens, I'm going to be grateful. And what am I going to learn mm-hmm. from each moment? Whether that moment can be like the worst moment. You know, if I was to like get hurt, well, what did it teach me? Mm-hmm. What am I going to learn from it? Yes, you're going to go through pain and all this kind of stuff. Yet I can learn something from this moment. Like when you were on Mount Rainier, mm-hmm. when you got injured in your knee and had your PCL torn and then going through the hypothermia, you look back, you can reflect back and tell yourself or ask yourself, what did I learn from that? Mm-hmm. We can do this going into each day. Mm-hmm. And then we start to see the days, each day different. We start to see each moment different. We even start to see people that we despise in a mm-hmm. past differently. We start looking at things a lot differently because we can learn from every single person that we come across. I do it even like with homeless people. Right. And I don't like judge anybody like that. I will go back and look right. at each person. What is
I think from your perspective, so to put on the hat of a novice who's just listening to my podcast or your podcast for a couple of months, you know, we can go, well, that's easy for you because you've had the martial art background, you've had this discipline, you have this discipline, so you've developed this discipline of creating a journal and looking at it, you shifted. What would be three steps that you could give to somebody who maybe is doubting, their story is that they can't do it because they don't have your background or they don't have my background? What are three steps that you can give to the average person to do what you just said, you know, look at things and appreciate and learn?
Number one, I would tell each person to look back into their own life. Start from within. When you start from within, look back at something that you've done really amazing. Mm-hmm. In fact, something that people would ask you, how did you do it? How do you do this? Every single person, I don't care where they're at, every single person has a value. They have an experience. They have a win that others have not had. Mm-hmm. For example, even a homeless person that's been able to survive on a street have been able to learn to survive on the street. They're able to, like, go find food in a dumpster somewhere, doing those kind of things. Whereas the average person, if they were thrown into that situation, wouldn't know what to do.
Right.
So you go and you ask that person, well, where can I go get food? And the homeless person will say, well, you can go over there. It's over there in the back of restaurants or in the grocery stores. They tend to toss out stuff. They have the knowledge and know-how that they can teach others. Mm-hmm. So find something that you have been good at. Even a small thing, you don't realize it, you have it. So right. Look within, find so that.
I that's an awesome, awesome point. And what happens, and I just wanted to add to that, if you can't think of it yourself, go ask your friends. Because often we discount what comes easy to us. And those things that you talk about, the homeless person, it comes easy to them now. So they would think nothing of it. So maybe a mom with 4 kids, how does she manage to make the day go by so quick? You know, she goes, well, geez, that's everybody does that. So many of the attributes that we are so good at, we discount because we think everybody has it. So if you're in that position that I can't think of anything like Bob is suggesting to do, go ask somebody. Ask them, hey, what do you admire about me? What do you think I'm good at?
Yes, well stated. I fully agree that we tend not to see the value that we have, and others will.
Right. So, so step one, look at something in your life that you excel at. If you can't find it yourself, ask somebody, but come to that, whatever that is. And then from there, what would a person do?
Then I would suggest learn to get uncomfortable in some way each day. Just a small bit, step outside what we call the comfort zone, because we tend to get comfortable in what we already know. So do something that you don't know. In fact, the base fear of all fears is a fear of the unknown. I don't care what fear it is. In fact, this is research that recently came out where they talked about the fear of the unknown. And what you don't know, you don't know. Take a step into what you don't know, even just a 1% step out. Once you do that, then you'll start to get known in that area. For me, my unknown, my greatest fear was public speaking. And I know that's with a lot of people. I had overcome that. I could do stuff in the military and the martial arts, you know, having bullets flying by. That wasn't as scary as public speaking. I've hurt myself in so many different ways. The physical pain was easy. When you put me in front of an audience, oh my gosh, that was scary.
Yeah.
I had to take that first step. And once I did that, I remember I was in front of a board and wanted to be on a board of directors and having to be in front of them. And these were all like business people and everything. And to talk, to deliver why I should be there. And I remember standing there, my feet planted and my eyes glazed over, my mouth and throat got dry. I felt flushed. My stomach was like, oh my gosh, what the hell am I doing here? Excuse my language.
Yes.
Yeah. So I talked and I didn't realize that they thought I did pretty good. I had no idea what I was saying. It just came out.
Yep.
Once I did that, once I stepped into that, then I said, huh, if they thought I did good and I thought I was like totally frozen, was out of this, it just started to become a little bit easier.
Yeah.
Then I went to the next thing and eventually I got onto TV. And I remember this is a good example. The person before me, talk about freezing. The person before me probably should have done what I did before in front of an audience. He was in a camera and the host was asking him a question. He was an expert.
Mm-hmm.
And he stood there with his eyes frozen, just like that. He couldn't even talk. So they actually had to go to commercial and then called me on. And this is my first appearance. Because of my early experience, because of that first tiny right. step, it was a lot easier to talk.
Sure.
Was I perfect? No.
Right. So step two is get into your be comfortable with being uncomfortable.
Yes, and even just a tiny bit. You don't have right. to take this giant leap. Just a tiny bit.
Yeah.
Just a tiny bit outside. Right. And that's all you need. That's all you need. That's all you need.
And then you said there was three steps. So we covered number one, number two. What would be the third?
The third one, as I said earlier, have a specific mission mm-hmm. to focus on, from passion to mission. And when I say mission, the mission is the big thing, is that big thing. It could be that dream could be part of your mission.
Mm-hmm.
So focus on that mission and then think about what can I do in order to reach that mission? And then chunk it back step by step all the way to beginning. So mission is always beginning. And Stephen Covey said this, begin with the end in mind.
Right.
If you want to reach anything, you're not going to reach it by starting from the beginning where you're at. Right. You got to have something greater to focus on. Whatever it is. We look at all the great people that's accomplished whatever. They had a mission, a vision that they focused on. And they could see it. So you need to really be clear of what your mission is, what your purpose is, what that vision is. So once you're clear and with all the details on how you want to create it, then you need to step by step, come back to the beginning, look at all the processes and then start. Go back to like in step two, start to take those little steps. Get uncomfortable taking those steps. You're going to get more and more comfortable as you go along.
Right.
Yet you have to do that. So you go back to step two, take those small steps, being uncomfortable towards that mission. And once you do that, you're going to start moving towards it and start accomplishing great things.
Awesome. Great, 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 great advice, Bob. Awesome stuff. Hey, as we're wrapping up here, I want to jump back to a statement that you made and ask you for your advice on this. One of the things you talked about, you used the word, and I love the word disempowering. And so we go back to that conversation earlier about stories that we have, they create, and even if we just change one word. In your experience with yourself and with your experience with your clients, what is the biggest disempowering word that most people use, and what do you suggest they replace it with?
I think a lot of people will say, and I like to, not just one word, but a sentence. Well, mm-hmm. people will tend to repeat, I am unworthy.
Mm-hmm.
So they would say unworthy quite a bit. I hear this time and time again. And they should always replace it with a word that is the opposite of that, worthy. So instead of unworthy, worthy.
Mm-hmm.
And then install it. Yeah, I am worthy. I will accomplish this or that because I am worthy of that. I am valuable.
Would you even dig deeper than that? And I think that's an awesome one because that's some of the core limiting beliefs that almost everybody has. I'm not worthy. I'm not enough. Those type of things. But could you dig deeper into that and even just from the I am worthy to I am loved, meaning self-love?
Self-love is a big part of that. Self-belief mm-hmm. is another part of that. Yes, going down to that love, down to valuable, down to those kind of things. So if we think back, and I'm actually going to even do something even more because we talked about this earlier. Mm-hmm. There's a process where we think about where our words and our feelings actually come from. And this is going to be even more powerful. So we think about an iceberg, right? Mm-hmm. So an iceberg, at the top of the iceberg are the results that we want out of life. Mm-hmm. Then at the surface water, just above that, are the behaviors mm-hmm. that we want. So the behaviors lead to the results.
Yep.
Okay. Just below that would be things like the words and all these kind of things.
Mm-hmm.
So, and as we go farther down, so we have the emotions, the feelings. So the feelings and like emotions. So emotions are the words. So the feelings are the physical expression mm-hmm. of the emotions.
Mm-hmm.
What is the feelings come from where? Our physiology. So at the bottom, the biggest part of the iceberg is the physiology.
Mm-hmm.
So I'm going to suggest to everybody, yes, have the words, yet attach it to your physiology.
Mm.
When you can attach it to your physiology, change your physiology. One of the best ways, if you're feeling anxious or depressed or any of these other kind of emotions, start the process of rhythmic breathing or coherent breathing from the heart. And the way it goes is that you want to breathe in for certain counts. It's suggested to breathe in for a count of four, mm-hmm. exhale for a count of six, and just do this focusing on your heart.
Mm-hmm.
When we get into a state of coherence, it's your heart in a state of coherence instead of every which way,
mm-hmm.
then it's going to affect every single organ in your body. It's going to reengage your executive function or your prefrontal cortex.
Mm.
Once you do that, then you can take control of those emotions. You'll look at it for what it really is, those disempowering words and emotions for what they really are, and being able to install more empowering words. I could tell you to use a word, yet if you're under some kind of duress or stress or anything going on, your executive function is not going to function. In fact, under stress, your prefrontal cortex, you're actually having a frontal lobotomy. So this is actually being detached
right.
from you. Use the physiology. Do the breathing.
Mm-hmm.
Do like the physiology of excellence, as we learned in NLP,
mm-hmm.
that
mm-hmm.
works. And in fact, I don't even know why they don't even teach that anymore, because I think it's very powerful.
Right.
Yes. So use things like that. Stand strong. Have an anchor. So, I'm powerful, or whatever that anchor is.
Right.
When you go into a situation, use that on a regular basis.
Right. So what I'm hearing, what I'm hearing is that most of us, so we have an emotion or a feeling, and an emotion is a feeling with a label on it.
Yes.
Right? I'm mad or I am or whatever this is. And then there's words that we use to elicit that label, which then creates that feeling. And so this is how we create it. What I'm hearing you say is not forget about the words, but that will work at time. But if we change the word, we should change the emotion. But what I'm hearing is even circumvent all that, go right down to the feeling through this
rhythmic the physiology.
Beat, right. Yes. So you're connecting the heart and the mind together. You're syncing those together so that those feelings dissipate and that you're able to activate your executive, your functions.
Yes. And the truth is all feelings and physiology are nothing but electrical pulses mm-hmm. with neurotransmitters.
Right.
That's just what's going through our body. Once we're able to get down to that level, and we think about Tibetan monks, we think about people that have that amazing ability, and even Wim Hof, the Iceman, he talks about that quite a bit. Mm-hmm. He does specific breathing exercises in order for people to be attached, where he can do extreme stuff, like climbing to the death zone at Mount Everest in his shorts, nothing else. And we can control, once we control our physiology, we can control everything else, our emotions and all the way up, leading to the results that we want out of life.
Right. Perfect. Bob, this has been fascinating. I'm sure we could go on for hours and hours and hours. I just wanted to thank you again for your time. So for those, tell the listeners how they can get a hold of you. What's the best way? Some of the programs that you're offering, books and some other things. Let us know all the ways we can get in touch with you.
Yes, they can go to bobchoat.com. That's BOBCHOAT.com. And that will have links to everything. Amazon.com has my book, Mind Your Own Fitness. I talk about the mindset of fitness. Mm-hmm. And again, I have a link to the School of Transformation. They can also go to the schoolofTransformation.com and listen to my episodes there, right. Which I will have.
And you're pretty active on Facebook too, right? So they can.
Pretty active on Facebook. They can look me up on Facebook, on Instagram, at Bob Choate on Instagram. And yeah, I'm just having a blast through all those platforms.
Fantastic. Well, again, Bob, thank you so much for your time today. I'm sure we'll have to reconnect again in the near future. Thank you so much.
You're welcome, and thank you for having me on, Greg. You rock.
My pleasure. Thanks for listening to the Warrior Mind Podcast. If you liked what you've heard, please tell your friends and subscribe by your favorite RSS feed or iTunes. Also, make sure you check out www.warriormindtraining.com. Until next time, live with courage, and remember, every facet, every compartment of your mind is to be programmed by you. And unless you take your rightful responsibility to program your own mind, the world will program it for you.